Folks, I am really excited to talk about our newest sponsor for the coaching staff, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, also All-American Used Cars and Trucks. Two really, really good businesses. I'm going to start with Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. You know, it's hard to find a good mechanic. It's hard to find somebody that you trust. And, you know, long before this situation came about, we had been taking our cars to Ruiz for a year, year and a half, and they've done great, great work. They're honest. They're upfront. They can do everything. They, you know, take care of your motor, take care of your brakes, tires, oil, so simple stuff like oil changes, brake pads, mufflers, whatever you may need. Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust are going to take care of it for you. If you are in the Omaha area and you are looking for a quality, reasonably priced, customer-friendly situation, you're not going to regret giving Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust a chance here. They are located at 4839 North 90th Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68134. You could give Esmeralda a call up there. Her number is 402-317-2572. And they'll get you taken care of. I'm saying this as a customer. We literally do not bring our cars anywhere other than Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust for anything that we do from this point for the last year or two. So again, another business here, All American Used Cars or Trucks. If you're in the market for a used car or truck, go check out Juan Carlos's business there. 144th and I-80, 14706 Schooner Road here in Omaha. Go check it out here. If you're looking to exchange a car, buy, sell, trade, whatever it may be, you're going to get an honest deal from honest people. So go check out Ruiz Auto Service and Exhaust and All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to episode number 121 here on the coaching staff, sponsored by Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All American Used Cars and Trucks. Guess what, Tony? I get to bring my car into Ruiz Auto this week. Had a little check engine light come on. And I don't think it's going to be great news, but we're going to find out here when I bring it in a couple of days. So I got that going for me, buddy. How about you?
Well, I'm just enjoying the 47 degree weather, and I've heard that there may be a couple of days in the 50s this week. So I will be walking around with a permanent smile on my face after last week's really Antarctic type temperatures.
Oof, yeah, that was pretty brutal. We legit could have had four snow days in a row here in Omaha. We had two. We could have had four if we really wanted to. So how many did you guys have late starts then, or what'd you have?
We started late one time. I was surprised. I thought we would get at least multiple, but we got one. So I guess I won't be in school the second, third week in June, so I should just be quiet and smile.
Yeah, exactly. So episode 121. Tony, I've got some heavy hitters on the uniform numbers here. I didn't realize how many great athletes wore the uniform number 21. Are you ready for this, sir? Deion Sanders.
Pretty good.
Roberto Clemente.
Really good.
LaDainian Tomlinson. Charles Woodson, Frank Gore, greatly underrated running back.
Yeah, very consistent.
Slamming Slammy Sosa from the Chicago Cubs. Hi! Juan Marichal, Stan Mikita, famously from Wayne's World, Stan Mikita's Donuts. I like the jelly donut, please. Roger Clemens and Warren the Rocket. Roger Clemens and Warren Spahn. So that's a list, buddy. That's a list. And we got Yeah, and we've got some dudes here that are basketball guys that have worn uniform number 21 as well here. I got seven of them. Five of them for sure Hall of Famers by the end of their career, and one, he might be in, I don't know, and one was part of one of the most famous teams of the 80s.
Oh boy. Jimmy Butler?
Yep, that's one.
Okay, got one, and that's probably the one that I am 100% with.
One more player, still active, used to be Jimmy Butler's teammate. That's not a team. A very short time, he was his teammate for less than a season.
He was with the T-Wolves, he was with the Bulls, the Heat.
Let's see here. To stay with Mike Myers, Austin Powers had bad teeth. He's got bad knees, baby. Might be the worst contract in basketball in the next couple of years.
I am drawing a blank on this one.
Joel Embiid.
Embiid. Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Three other guys are, everybody else is retired. Two of the greatest power forwards of all time. One of the greatest dunkers of all time.
Power forwards, 21. Maurice Lucas.
Nope. Better than Maurice Lucas.
Oh, man.
If you got one of these right, then anything would be possible. Kevin Garnett is correct. Played at the same time as Kevin Garnett, but always seemed to get the best of him. Had much better teams than Kevin Garnett. Tim Duncan, there we go. One of the greatest...
Power forward of all time?
Yeah, I think he is, myself. One of the greatest in-game dunkers of all time.
I would say Vince Carter, but I don't...
1980s.
Larry Nance.
Nope.
Gerald Wilkins?
He's related to Gerald Wilkins. There you go. And then the other two, they'd probably be pretty tough. One would be really tough. Dave Bing of the old Detroit Pistons. And then Michael Cooper of the Showtime Lakers. Yeah, Koopaloop. Yep. So that's what we got, buddy. Episode 121. We are talking about habits, building good habits, breaking bad habits. Tony, life is all about habits, in my opinion. That is my theme. It is something that is really important to me. I'm really passionate about, whether it's organizational habits or personal habits or whatever it may be. It's just something I think that if you're going to be successful, this is something you have to conquer, in my opinion.
So James Clear's Atomic Habits is one of your favorite books?
It is. I have a listing of three books here that I would highly recommend. Atomic Habits is one of them. The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg and Practice Perfect by Doug Lamov, kind of the educational side of habit building and practicing perfect and getting good habits in that regard. Three really, really influential books on my teaching and coaching career. How many of those have you read, my friend?
Just some James Clear's Atomic Habits.
Okay. Highly recommend the other two. But
the other two?
Yeah, they're really good. Let's talk a little James Clear. What do you got for me, buddy?
You know, I think one of the first things that has to happen is that you sit down with your player and you identify those bad habits. I think that's one of the very first things that has to happen. You know, whether it's, you know, they get a rebound, they automatically take a dribble and pick the ball up, or their elbow is wherever when they shoot it. Just whatever it may be, I think you have to identify that habit and then show it to them with film just because of the fact that I think a part of the process is just admitting that it is a bad habit and then pointing it out and then finding a plan to repair it.
Yeah. And one of the things that is the hardest about habits is we all fall into habits just naturally. We get up early, mm-hmm. we get up late, we eat Doritos instead of bananas. We, you know, whatever it may be. We're organized, we're not organized. The hardest thing to do is, you know, a lot of us want to change bad habits, but it's hard to break those bad habits because it's so much easier to fall back on what you've always done before, hence the bad habit. And that's something that Clear really talks about in his book. I'm looking at my notes from it right now, Tony. He calls it the Valley of Disappointment. You expect to make progress in a linear fashion, and it's frustrating how ineffective changes can seem in the first few days, weeks, or even months. But in order to make a meaningful difference, habits need to persist long enough to break through this plateau, what I call the plateau of latent potential. When you break through the plateau of latent potential, people will call it an overnight success, but you know it's not an overnight success. It's something that you've worked on over and over and over again.
Yeah, I mean, is there really anything that may be more false than overnight success? Because I don't know if that truly is something that exists. And if it does, it's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. Because people that are successes, they're the ones that, you know, whatever it may be, but if we're taking a look at sports, they're the ones that are in the gym, those countless hours where nobody's watching them so that they can be successful and the lights are on and they're at their brightest.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking about helping players break their habits. And I think you brought up some good points about pointing it out to them, showing it to them on film. And that's a really good place to talk, to start at this week, basketball wise, is that, you know, we want, you know, our job is to help players break habits and to get them to do what we ask them to do, to move the ball. Let's say we got a ball stopper and they don't move the ball quick enough for us, and we get frustrated if that habit isn't broken in a week, in 2 weeks, or whatever it may be. I think the biggest thing when you're talking about breaking habits with your players is just staying on top of it and being consistent with how you're treating it. But what's the fine line, Tony? Here's a question I want to ask you. What's the fine line between coaching them through breaking these habits and being on them so much that they get frustrated because they aren't making the same steps or the steps forward that they would like to make? I mean, how do you handle those individual players or those teams that you're trying to get to, you know, from point A to point B, and you know it's best for them, but you don't want it to be so all-encompassing that if it's not coming fast enough for them, they get frustrated and they just throw their hands up in the air and they say, I'm done, Vis. I'm just out of this, you know, type of a thing.
You know, it's a great question because it is such a balance. And I think that's a part of the art of coaching, just knowing when to step in and to be involved and when to kind of step back. And I think it's like anything. I mean, when a player hits the proverbial rock bottom, if you will, and they come to you and you can, you know, and asking for help, I think that's a great sign. Mm-hmm. You know, just going to them and pointing it out and you kind of get that eye roll and stuff like that, that's probably not the time to keep proceeding down that path with them. But I think the things that you talk about, you just continue to show up because film doesn't lie, you know, and right here, hey, we just should have skipped that ball, or right here, hey, you should be at the big line and help, talking to your teammate that you have their help there. And you just continue to show that. But it is one of those things where as a coach, it's a feel thing. You know, if they come to you and you can see they've hit, you know, like we talked about earlier, that proverbial rock bottom, then you're probably going. But the one thing to kind of keep in mind there is it takes over 20 days to build a habit. Mm-hmm. It's not something that just happens overnight. And so it's going to be something that you want to hold them accountable for. But if you continue to nag and harp and all those other words on that, I don't know if you're going to find the audience that you want in doing that.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, you know, it's just that daily poke, that daily reminder of doing that. And, you know, let's say you get in a situation, let's use something easy, Tony, turnovers. And you're talking about turnovers with your team, and that's the one thing that's keeping you from becoming, you know, from going from average to good or good to great. You know, you're showing it to them on film. You're pointing it out in practice. But at the same time, you got to live with a certain amount of turnovers. You got to have players looking to make plays. You know, but then let's say you lose a game, you lose a tough game because you just have three or four key turnovers at the wrong spot, the wrong situation. Here you've, let's say it's January 15th, and you've been talking about this since November 15th. And you know, let's just paint with a really broad brush of an average team of, you know, teams that you've coached, Tony. How were you addressing that, you know, in the locker room, in the next day of practice? You know, what's the step by step where it just feels like, God darn it, we just can't get over that doggone hump with this?
Yeah, one of the things that we start off and we talk about it early, like we let them know, hey, month of November, had a fight in our way, if you will, we'll allow you 15 turnovers a game. You know, you get into that first, second week of December, that number drops down to 12, and then we kind of leave it there because you run into that Christmas break, and then when you come back from Christmas break, we give them a week or two after Christmas break, and we drop it down to 10 about the middle of January. And, you know, there's been a variety of things that we've done. Like this year's group was really interesting for us because they met it all the time. Like they met our goals with our turnovers. They were under 15, they were under 12, they were 10 or less, you know, pretty much throughout the year. Not saying there wasn't a game or two that you know, was a little bit whatever, but they met it throughout. Other teams, we've done things with them in terms of, like we talked about earlier, show and film. You know, we've also make sure that we put in things in practice that help with that. Jump stops and pass fakes are probably two of the biggest things that we do. I know you've mentioned your Villanova footwork series before and how you work on that with them. You know, we would do similar things. You know, you've mentioned Tate's lock on here a number of times. We do the box drills, and, you know, we do Showalter's pivot series that he does at Snow Valley and different things like that as well. And then we also talk about meeting passes. You know, I'm a big believer that if you meet passes, you're probably saving your teammates two or three turnovers a game, to be honest with you. Yeah. If you just simply need a pass, run through and go meet that pass. And so those are things that we do, just again, set goals, watch film, and then also make sure that you're giving them the tools to be successful. Because you can sit here and say, hey, we want 15 turnovers or less, or whatever your goal may be. But if you aren't doing things in practice, jump stops, pass fakes, pivots, things like that, meeting passes, you're just using empty words.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got three on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are three on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have three off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also, Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have two smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School. And he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have two designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile, mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. Three coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring four or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. You know, one of the things that I liked as you were going through that, Tony, is kind of the crawl, walk, run. Like, you're not coming into the season, okay, we're just going to be great with the ball. We're going to, you know, only average 10 turnovers a game right here, right now on November 10th or whenever. It's going to be a process. And I think that whenever you're dealing with any habit, whether it's your team's habit, your personal habits, a player's habits, whatever it may be, it's going to be the proverbial Nick Saban process. And you got to crawl first before you walk, before you run. And I think that as a coach, as you're coaching your teams, as you're going through the process of your season, and for me, you know, this is something that I know at times I did not do very well because I wanted to win everything so badly. I became a much better coach where I'm like, okay, it's not about December 1st. It's about February 1st. And we've got to move it forward and get to that point by February 1st. So once I find once I flip that switch, so to speak, Tony, that made habit forming much, much better. And taking those we'll go back to James Clear here. He spends a lot of time in Atomic Habits talking about being 1% better. And that was my whole theme, especially at my most recent job, was we just got to be 1% better today. Just get 1% better. You're not going to go 10% better in one day, but just get 1% better today. And if all 18 of you get 1% better, guess what? As a team, we're 18% better today. And you know, we go through that. If we extrapolate that out to a week, we're going to be at this number. If we extrapolate that out to a month, we're going to be here. And that was just the whole thing. And again. We talk about reading from time to time on here, and over the 5+ years of A Pen and a Napkin, I can't emphasize reading and researching and thinking outside the box enough. And we've talked plenty about it here. And this is another situation where reading a book like Atomic Habits really helped me with that crawl, walk, run process of focusing. Okay, we're not going to get 10% better today, but can we get 1% better today? And that helps refocus the process of it, so that, again, hopefully you're playing your best ball by early to mid-January. That's another thing that I was thinking of. And in that vein, having those small goals like you were talking about, going from 15 to 13 to 12 to 10 or whatever the numbers were that you threw out there, writing those down. writing those goals down so that you know, hey, this is front and center for the Kennedy Cougars, that it's January 15th. It's time for us to only turn the ball over 12 times a game, or whatever the dates were that you had associated with that, Tony. I said a big mouthful there for the last 2 or 3 minutes. What do you think?
Yeah, I think SMART goals are important, specific, measurable, all that stuff. You want to have that with them. And just so that they have those things that they can check off the list. Hey, if we do these things, we're going to be successful. And the other thing I thought was key as well is just the consistency thing. Like, it's not we jump stop or we pivot, we shot fake, pass fake, whatever. It's not that we do that once a week. We do that every practice. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, if you can do those things consistently, you're going to build good habits. And if you build those good habits, and like you said, keep getting 1% better each day, you're going to be playing your best basketball at the right time of year. But yes, SMART goals, consistency, you know, just making sure that those are things that are ingrained in there and you do over and over. I think that is so very, very key just in terms of helping young people learn how to play the game of basketball.
Mm-hmm. What else you got, my friend?
You know, I go back to this. It's a lot of it's the focus on fundamentals. You know, a lot of times people, fundamentals aren't fun. Yeah, you know, you go back there. Well, if you want to be successful, they kind of are. And it's a deal where if you can focus on fundamentals and just keep doing that. And I think a lot of times people get wrapped up in teaching kids how to run plays rather than teaching kids how to play. And this time of the year, you know, when you get to the end of February and the tournament trail has started or getting ready to start, whatever the case may be, there's really not a lot of secrets. And so if you go out there and, you know, you're out there and you're just teaching how to run plays, people know your plays. They're going to have where they're going to take away option A, B, and sometimes even C. And you've got to have kids that know how to play the game. And when things break down, get to that last 10 seconds or 5 seconds, whatever it may be on the shot clock, you have a kid that can make a play. And if you've taught them how to be fundamentally sound and how to play the game of basketball, those chances go significantly up.
Yeah. I wrote something down when you said that, Tony. Fundamentals aren't fun, but winning is fun. Yeah. And if you want to win, you got to be fundamentally sound. And that's the, you know, selling them on that 1%, getting 1% better, focusing in on those, you know, and that's a deal where if you're, let's kind of go back to our theme of the day, and it's an easy one for coaches to understand, which is turnovers. You know, you get into your film study and Billy turns it over because he drags his pivot foot or he doesn't play off of 2 feet or whatever. Hey, this is why we do, you know, the Kennedy drill, because this situation right here, have we worked on this? We've done this drill every day for 35 days. Well, we need to do it for another 10 days because we still haven't got it yet. And some of that's your fault and some of that's my fault as a coach because we haven't mastered that yet or whatever it may be. However, whatever verbiage you want to use to explain that, but I think that's a big part of it and kind of combining a lot of the different things that we said is, you know, this is why we do Nova rips every day. This is why we do 3-on-0 shooting. This is why we work on screening, get low, get wide, protect yourself, all of those different things. This is the key to it. And fellas, when we show this on film, this is why we do this.
Yes. And, you know, I think those are so very key. Just like I said, taking time to break down film with them. This is not what we want. This is what we want. And, you know, kind of going back and building off that a little bit, it's that positive reinforcement thing. And I know Clear gets into that a lot with his Atomic Habits as well. Just the fact that when they do it right, show them what happens when they do it right, and then praise them like crazy for it. Because we all, to a certain extent, are pleasers, aren't we? We want to get praised when we do things well. And so if you want them to repeat something, make sure that you are reinforcing it positively with praise.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important, that whatever habits you're trying to build or break, Tony, write it out, and have it there, like you said, front and center. If you are a team, if you are a coach that is struggling with that, you got to put that on your, on your practice schedule every day as well. You know, we have to focus on pivoting well, or we've got to take care of the basketball, focus on turnovers. This is, you know, this is the thing that we really want to talk about, or whatever it may be. But I think you've got to have that reminder in front of you. It's not just, oh yeah, you know, we turn it over for the 10th time in practice. Oh crap. Yeah. We gotta do that, fellas, or whatever it may be. I think writing it out, having it in front of you, making sure that you are consistently having that front and center with you as a coach or as a person. I think that's a big part of establishing those habits as well, in my mind anyway.
Yes. And, you know, I think the more clearly you can give them something to track or something to write down, you know, it just helps to engage more senses. And it's going to be something that they're more likely to be successful with because of the fact that they've been able to, oh yeah, I was a poor free throw shooter. Now my free throw percentage, I was shooting 55. Now I'm up to 60, you know, 62, whatever the case may be. And it continues to go up because I've got this visualization or this routine that I am now doing, it's paying off. And then what happens when they start to have success, then there becomes that belief. And we both know how important it is to believe and have the confidence that you can do something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I've got one more big thing to talk about, buddy. What do you got?
Yeah, the thing I would go with too is to replace bad habits with good ones. And I know, you know, Tony, that's not earth shattering. No, it's not. But I think a lot of times what happens is when we start to do these habits thing and we take a look, oh man, they cannot dribble with their left hand. Well, it's not like you can tell them, well, don't dribble with your left hand, because you don't think the opponent knows that they are, as they watch film, that, you know, Sally or whoever struggles to go to the left, you know, they're going to do that. So you've got to make sure that you help them build that. And so what might happen before practice begins, they have some type of dribbling routine that they are working on again, 20 plus straight days. And then by the time, like you said, that November 1st to February 1st mentality, now all of a sudden going to their left or dribbling with their left hand is something that they are at least competent with. And so I think that's the thing that we have to realize is that, you know, they have bad habits, yes, but you've got to help them to correct and build good ones.
Mm-hmm. I think that one of the things I picked up on, this is a Mike Nabors thing, Tony. I don't know if you've heard this or not, or if you've heard Coach Nabors talk about it, but and this might be an Atomic Habits thing as well. I can't remember for sure, but bright spots. And one of the things that we often sometimes do, kind of building on what you were talking about there, Tony, was we get so locked in on a player's weakness. I can't play Billy because he can't go left, right? You know what I mean? We're all guilty of it. At some point in our career, we're guilty of it. But we forget that, yeah, Billy can't go left, and maybe Billy doesn't shoot it well, but man, Billy defends. Billy's tough as nails. He makes every 50-50 ball an 80-20 in our favor. And yeah, he's got these warts in his game, but he brings so many other things to it. And when we confront players with their bad habits, I think another way you can present that as well, kind of building off what you're saying, is, yeah, you know what, Billy, I know you can't go left very well. And yeah, we're going to work on that. And yeah, I'm going to be on you. But don't forget how good you are at this and this and this and this. And those are strengths that you can bring to us. And so kind of one of the things that shifted in my way of thinking was, and again, this is not Marty Plum talking. This is directly coming from Coach Nabors and his philosophy. We would really talk about a lot more about their strengths than their weaknesses. And now we would say, okay, Billy, you got to work on your left. But man, don't forget about the way you attack the basket. Don't forget, you know, going to your right. Don't forget about this and this and this. You know, one of the things, and obviously we watch a lot of Nebraska basketball, and when they went through their 6-game losing streak, and this is just a little thing that I've noticed in what's changed here, during their 6-game losing streak, they have a guy on their team named Juwan Gary, and all of a sudden he started shooting like 6, 7, 8 3-pointers a game, and that's not his game. What they did and what they got him back to doing is hitting the offensive glass and putting him in situations where he can put the ball on the floor with his right hand and get that left shoulder inside of his defender and going up and finishing. And lo and behold, you know, one of the things that kind of helped them turn around after that 6-game losing streak was Juwan getting back to who he was. Now, he still shoots, you know, 2 or 3 3-pointers a game, but not 8 or 9 3-pointers a game. And so focusing on that, yeah, you know, they, you know, I'm sure they want him to be a better 3-point shooter, and he is a better 3-point shooter than he was. But don't forget about those strengths that you have as well as you continue to work on those weaknesses that a player has.
Yeah, play to a player's strengths and build that up and build that into them. You know, we had a kid, our system sometimes can get a little bit complex. And so they would struggle to pick up what we were doing. And so what would happen is we would have a coach designated, hey, we're going to be in this set. You need to be here on this. Just make sure you're away from the ball. And then when the shot goes up, go offensive rebound for us. And then defensively, make sure that you block out and rebound for us. Okay, I can do that. And then they were fine. And so, like you said, Marty, sometimes it's not about always identifying what a kid can't do. Play to the strengths, build them up in what they can do, and make sure you design your system. And I think that's one of the fun things about high school basketball is you get a new puzzle each year, so to speak, and trying to put that puzzle together and making sure that it fits the group that you have, not last year's or 2 years ago or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, I love that, Tony. That's really good. So, last thing I have, Tony, and if you've got more, obviously we can keep going. I think when you look at a player, and this kind of goes back to a little bit of what I had talked about before. There's this and this and this and this and this. If you asked my wife, she would give you a laundry list of things that she wishes that I would change about myself. And I don't blame her. I mean, you know, she's probably right. No, she's not probably right. She is right. But when you're looking at a player, when you're looking at your team, you can only change so many things at a time. You cannot fix everything. So put what you want to change, either about yourself, about a player, about a team, about your classroom, about your job. Focus on one, maybe two things at the most. Get that fixed and get that taken care of, and then move on to number two or number three or number four, whatever you're at on your list of things. There's only so many things that you can change at once. And if you try to change everything all at once, the odds of you being successful and happy and productive and having your team go in the right direction, have you as a person go in the right direction, whatever it may be, it's going to be really, really difficult for that to happen. I really think it's, you know, here's the one or two things that we need to do. Billy, here's the one or two things that you need to do. Pick and choose what you think are the most important things and then go with it from there. And then once you feel really, really comfortable about those habits, then move on to the next thing. But don't try to solve 12 things at once. That's nearly impossible to do.
You know, I think about that kind of like as a teacher where, you know, you come in and school wants to change, you know, 6, 7, 8 different things because they want to do, you know, improve this, improve that, improve the other. And I always sit back and like, how are you going to know which one of those 8, 9, 10 things actually helped it to improve? Because you're changing so much. And like you said, pick 2 or 3. You know, and really kind of hone in on that. We could make a laundry list of things, but pick 2 or 3 and stick with those. And that way you have an idea in terms of knowing what helped them to improve. And the other thing too, if you throw out 10, 11, 12 different things to improve, it just seems like a mountainous and it's overwhelming. And they're probably going to get frustrated and throw their hands up in the air and give up. And you don't want that as a coach.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Because, you know, do this and do this and do this and do this. Okay, what do you want me to do? Pick one thing. I can do it. I can do one thing, maybe two, but I can't do 5 things at once here. So give me 1 or 2 things. Let me get those taken care of the right way, and then let me move forward. I think is the good attitude to have.
Yes, I completely agree with that.
Yep. You got anything else, Tony?
The only other thing I would throw out there, would be to find a mentor or a teammate. Mm-hmm. You know, I think at times we as coaches, you know, have these great ideas, but if you can pair them up, like I had a young man ask me during the season, what could they do in the off season to help them improve, which I really appreciated. And I'm like, I don't know how well you get along with this kid. And this kid's a senior and he's a sophomore. So there's, you know, a couple of years of age difference there. But I'm like, this kid has a tremendous work ethic. And that's one of the things that was when he was younger like that, we had some of our senior guards that took him under their wing and mentored him. And I think that's so very, very important, is to plug them in with a mentor that can help them get through this process, because they've all been there at that crisis of confidence. And as you roll the rock up to the top of the hill, are you going to be able to push it to the other side, make all kinds of progress, or is that rock going to roll back over you? And if you can get somebody to work out with and to try to help build habits and to repair weaknesses or whatever the case may be, your chances of actually doing that go tremendously up when you have somebody with you that will go through the grind with you.
Who would be two or three of your most important mentors, Tony?
It was a variety of them. I was young and dumb, and now I'm just old and dumb, but I was young and dumb at one time. And when I first started coaching, and I reached out to Tony DiCecco, he was the UNI women's coach at that time. I said, hey, I'd love to come work your camp. Mm-hmm. Marty, I've never been around a coach that knew fundamentals better than him. And he was phenomenal. And he was great in the fact that he took this wet behind the ear, I think it was 23, 24, something like that, kid, and let me work his camps and gave me access to a Division I coach, and I just soaked it up like a sponge. I just loved it. Another guy that I give a lot of credit to is Bill Finley, our mutual friend. I don't know if you're going to find a guy that's any better at X and O's than Bill Finley. And, you know, being at his camps and having his cell phone number and email and talking to him really helped me in my growth and development with strategy and what to run and different things like that. But those have been probably two of the biggest, you know, in terms of like that. And then wherever I've been, I've always had good relationships with the other coaches, you know, whether it was Mitch Osborne and Harlan or John McCowan here at Kennedy. But I've learned a ton from those guys as well. But those have been some of my bigger mentors in my life.
Yeah. I mean,
how about you?
You know, Coach Finley would be way up there, you know, just the conversations. And we don't talk often, but I know there are a couple of times I've called him and we've had a couple of long conversations about this, that, and the other thing. You know, I've been really, my dad has been great. You know, I'm really fortunate. I've got a great relationship with my dad. I feel really blessed in that regard because I know not everybody has that. You know, Mike Power was a huge, huge guy, in my career, just learning from him. And then, you know, kind of the usual suspects I've talked about here on here before, you know, just, you know, Don Meyer. I mean, just hugely influential on my career, on the things that I've done and how I look at the game. And, yeah, I mean, all of those would be really, really important, but, you know, kind of like you, learned from a lot of people along the way, and they've shown me good habits. Sometimes, Tony, you learn from people who, those are not habits I want to have, you know, and I think that's really important as well.
I mean, I would agree. I think you go out there and you look at things like, I don't think I can do that, because you have to be you. I think a lot of times we want to be a dime store knockoff of somebody, but you have to be you. Don't get me wrong. You can learn from different people, but it's got to fit you and your style.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done. And we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A pen and a napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Well, Tony, you know who has been a great mentor to both of us. Tony, it is your turn for trivia. What do you have for me, my friend?
Yesterday, I was watching College Game Day as I was walking on the treadmill and saw this fact, and I thought you might be interested in it because it was at the University of Houston.
Okay.
Marty, what year was the first one in which Houston was ranked number one in men's college basketball?
I feel good about this answer, Tony. I'm going to say it was 1969 after they beat UCLA in the quote-unquote game of the century.
Good guess.
Really? Oh, wow. 68.
Correct.
Okay. So I wasn't far off.
No.
Was that after the... Was the game of the century 68 or 69?
Oh, I'm going to look at that.
Yeah. Well, while you're looking that up, I have to give myself a congratulatory. Yes, and it counts. He got it correct. Elvin Hayes on the outlet pass. Elvin Hayes, great individual player. If you read stuff about him, one of the most despised teammates of all time. A lot of people thought he was really selfish. Yeah. There's a story, I think it's in Bill Simmons' book of basketball, where when the Rockets drafted Ralph Sampson, and Elvin Hayes was at the end of his career, and they were obviously terrible, and that's why they got Ralph Sampson, because they tanked for him. Bill Fitch told Ralph Sampson the first thing, stay away from Elvin Hayes. I don't want you going anywhere near Elvin Hayes. So I thought that
January 20, 1968 was the game of the century.
Okay, so after the game of the century, they beat UCLA, and then they went up to number one. So, all right, very good. I think when Mel Allen was announcing that game of the century in the Houston Astrodome, he said,
how about that?
So, yeah, let's talk a little twib here this week, Tony. This week in basketball, Rock Chalk Jay. Now, again, by their standards, by a lot of schools would take this as a down season. But for Kansas, this is a disappointing run. Especially they were preseason ranked number one in the country. And they have really, really shown. Now, you know, the Big 12, again, proving to be a very, very good conference. But the last time that, you know, Kansas won three games in a row, Joe Biden was still president. That puts some things in perspective here. And they had the worst loss in Bill Self's career at Kansas, lost by 34 at BYU. They are 9-7 in the Big 12. That puts them squarely at sixth in the conference standings. Hunter Dickinson, individually playing well, but the Stores kid that they brought in from Wisconsin, he's on like his fifth school in 5 years or whatever it is, kind of the ultimate free agent. You know, they have just not reached what a lot of people perceive to be their potential here. They started out 7-0. To put this in perspective, Tony, they started out 7-0, and they beat Duke. And since then, they are 11-9 in their last 20 games. So not what they are used to in Lawrence, to say the least.
No, and I think with like the Thor kid, you know, you mentioned the number of schools and stuff, but Wisconsin's much better without him.
Yes.
That probably is not a good sign.
Yeah. You hate to, especially with a young person, to throw that type of, you know, accusation, you know, but these guys are at the very least semi-pros at this point. So I guess you could kind of, Chris, you know, hey, you know, kind of what's the, you leave there and they seem better and you're here and now it's, you know, and he's not the only reason. I mean, you know, he's not the only thing, but it's just been, yeah, it's been a tough go and it's still Kansas. They're still talented. Crap, I hit the wrong button, Tony. You know, and they still have a chance to, you know, they've got Colorado, but they wrap up here their regular season at Colorado, at home against Texas Tech, at Houston, and home against Arizona. So it doesn't get any easier for Bill Self's crew here as they wrap up their regular season. Now, they did get a big win over Steve Lutz, my friend Steve Lutz in Oklahoma State yesterday, blew them out by 32 at Fog Allen. Is this fool's gold, or is this maybe a trend in turning things in the right direction? Who knows? So
I will be interested to see how they do on the road, because if you look at their home record, it's still pretty good because it's the Fog, right?
Yeah.
On the road, they have been less than stellar. So if they start to win some games on the road, then I might say, hey, we're turning in the right direction. But until that happens, it may be an anomaly.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So nice job with anomaly there too, buddy. That was well enunciated. I like that. Yes. So let's jump over to the women's game here. Notre Dame moves up to number one in the country. And then, of course, right when we put them on the list, they lose today to North Carolina State. Heck of a game. We watched the whole fourth quarter and most of the overtimes here. Just a terrific, terrific basketball game. You know, these two guards for Notre Dame are just outstanding. You know, Hidalgo and Miles are really, really good. You know, they're not terribly deep. They're not terribly big, but those two perimeter players give them a chance to run with anybody. And what I like more than anything, Tony, is we really do have parity in the women's game at the top here. You know, this will be the fourth or fifth different number one team, maybe even more so. You know, UCLA barely squeaked by Iowa today, 67-65. You know, South Carolina, as we talked about, lost a couple of big games. You know, UConn seems like they're kind of coming on after getting blown out, after blowing out South Carolina. USC, Juju Watkins. I mean, it's just fun to see the possibility of seven or eight teams being having a chance to win the national championship, and 12, 13, 14 teams, maybe if everything goes right, can get to the Final Four. You know, you take a look at TCU with Haley Van Lith and Price, the post player. I mean, you know, they're really good. Ohio State is really good. You know, it's just a fun season for women's college basketball. And you know, Notre Dame losing today, I don't want to take any shine off of their season, because they've had a really good run, and they'll be back. They'll be fine.
Yeah, and, you know, if you take a look at the, I think it was the end of the first overtime, we're a tenth of a second,
yes,
away from the foul call than Notre Dame getting to shoot free throws. That's how paper thin that contest was. And, you know, North Carolina State is rated. I'm trying to remember 13th. Where they're at. I think they're in the top 15.
13.
And then, like, UCLA struggles to beat Iowa. Don't get me wrong. Beating Iowa and Iowa City is really, really tough, but Iowa's not ranked. And so parity is here in women's college basketball. And I think that's only going to add to the viewership of it and should make for a very, very exciting March Madness for them.
Yep. Victor Wembanyama, Tony, out for the year. Is this the worst thing in the world for the San Antonio Spurs?
No, it kind of reminds me in a way of when David Robinson got hurt and they ended up getting some guy named Tim Duncan. I'm not real sure how his career ended up, but I heard it was decent. But if they were to somehow get in the lottery and get Cooper Flagg, oh boy.
Hey, you'd have Wimby and Cooper. And boy, did you watch any of that Duke-Illinois game last night?
A little bit of it. They got the blowout, and I'm not really into watching 50-some point leads.
Well, I was watching. I was slipping back and forth between that and Arkansas and Missouri, which was a really, really fun game to watch. Wimby out for the rest of the year with a blood clot, and hopefully it's just a short term deal. It was up in his shoulder, wasn't it? I think.
Right shoulder, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. You know, hopefully that's just a slight bump in the road and it's not a long-term thing. Because, you know, obviously blood clots can get really, really dangerous in a short amount of time. They have that. You know, they also came out this week that Pop is not going to be back this year. I hope this isn't it for him. I hope he keeps on going here. But, you know, whether... They, you know, it would be a long shot for them to get Cooper Flagg. Let me take a quick look at the standings here. But this draft is really, really good. I've been fortunate enough working on another project to talk to a couple of guys who are NBA scouts. And, you know, they said this is one of the best drafts in the last 5 or 6 years. You got the two kids from Rutgers. You got the kid from Illinois who's a really good player. They got the French point guard that played. I saw him play last summer on TV. But this is going to be a really, really good draft. So let's say the Spurs, you get the third or fourth draft pick, and let's say they go after like an Ace Bailey out of Rutgers or something like that. I mean, you know, he's still going to have a chance to really, really help them. They looks like they are, they have about the ninth worst record in the league. You know, Brooklyn, Philly, Toronto, Portland, Utah, New Orleans, Charlotte, Washington, Brooklyn. I can't remember if I said that or not. So they're about ninth. So it's, you know, but the lottery odds have flattened. It gives them a little bit better chance than they normally would have. But I agree with you, Tony. I don't think this is the worst thing in the world for this to happen for the Spurs. So.
Yeah, they'll be on an ascent up over the next year or two. They'll be one of the top teams out west and probably be hoisting an NBA Champions Trophy sooner rather than later.
Yep. Coaches, by now you have seen the newest thing coming out of a pen and a napkin, the opening tip, Substack newsletter. I put an edition out there for free, and hopefully you see what a great investment this is going to be for you as a coach. I'm guessing it probably is, if you watch everything and listen to everything, it's going to take you almost 3 hours to get through everything on the opening tip newsletter here. What do we have in there? You've got an original article by myself here. Just thoughts, ideas on different coaching topics. Into the Lab. That's probably my favorite thing. Is the Into the Lab. It's me, another coach, and a whiteboard. And we're just drawing stuff up here. Stuff to help you out, to help you become better, and to help your team become better this coming season and beyond. Got another exclusive podcast. You heard the first one, Industriousness from the Wooden Pyramid of Success. And it's me and it's two semi-retired former girls basketball coaches, Matt Kern of York, Nebraska, Nate Wall of David City Aquinas here in Nebraska. And every newsletter, we're going to break down an aspect of Wooden's Pyramid of Success. Bookshelf recommendations from off the bookshelf, X's and O's stuff. I'm dropping in a university video. it's just going to be given to you there. You know, and I really believe in the products that I've put together. It's practical stuff that's going to help make you a better coach. And then we've got the Coach's Corner with links to clips and articles. As you saw, we had our two Olympic coaches, Steve Kerr and Cheryl Reeve. Just really, really good stuff here. And I know it's subscription-based, but goodness gracious sakes alive, as Coach Wooden would say, it is so affordable. $8 a month for two newsletters. That's $4 every newsletter. That's $2 every single week. Or you can get a year-long subscription, $75. That's 24 editions of the newsletter. That's basically $3 a newsletter. That's basically a dollar an hour if it takes you about 3 hours to get through everything that you're getting here. It could not be more affordable. It could not be more positive for you. It's going to help make you a better coach. So subscribe to the Opening Tip newsletter. Folks, you're not going to regret it. Tony, it's been a while, but I've got a surprise for you. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
To eat.
Arby's, we have the meat.
It's been a while since we've had some Arby's, Tony, but we've got a couple of big updates here. Vic Schaefer signs a 3-year extension with Texas women's basketball, and taking him off of the market, Dusty May signs an extension with Michigan to keep him out of the Indiana sweepstakes. Tony, what do you think of those two contract situations there?
I think both make a lot of sense. Vic Schaefer has done an outstanding job at Texas. If I remember correctly, last week we were singing his praises with knocking off, you know, they had beat South Carolina, they had beat LSU, and just does a fantastic job there. And then Dusty May has done an incredible job at Michigan. I'm trying to think of the other coach that they've had like a 12 or a 13 game turnaround. I believe it's Pat Kelsey at Louisville.
Yeah.
One of those two cats should be the NCAA Men Coach of the Year.
Yeah, they, you know, especially, you know, as much as a Gen Xer in the early 90s and how much I was into the Fab Five, you know, Juwan Howard, he probably got an extra year or two just because he was a Fab Five member, because you could kind of see that thing sliding off into the abyss. And Dusty May has come in, and boy, give the dude credit. He has done a terrific, terrific job at Michigan, getting the Maize and Blue back up to the upper half of the Big Ten Conference, in a much better Big Ten Conference than what it was last year as well. So hats off to both of those guys. And yeah, we'll expect some ranch with our curly fries here, fellas, if we get together here. So Tony, who's up for you, my friend?
I'm going with the Cleveland Cavaliers, Marty. Okay. They're 9-1 in their last 10. They've won 6 straight. And I think it's time that people might want to take them seriously as being the representative out of the Eastern Conference. But we'll see. We'll see. Because obviously we're 56 games in. So there's about 25, 26 games left to go.
Yeah.
And there's this crazy thing called the playoffs. But I am starting to become a believer in Cleveland.
You are Believeland in Cleveland?
I am.
You know, Kenny, you know, speaking of great coaching jobs, Kenny Atkinson has come in and done a terrific job. Now, Evan Mobley has improved. Darius Garland has been healthy all year. Last year, he was dealing with some crazy stuff. Broke his jaw. I can't imagine I can't imagine walking around with a broken jaw, let alone trying to play basketball after recovering from a broken jaw. So they've been terrific. They have been really good. Boston's starting to play a little bit better. Drew Holiday's back. And it looks like those two are kind of the cream of the crop in the Eastern Conference. Indiana's starting to play much better. The Detroit's starting to move up, but I think you're right, Tony. I think it's going to come down to Cleveland and Boston, and Cleveland with home court. You know, it looks like it's going to be hard for Boston to make up 5.5 games in 26 games here. So, especially with the way Cleveland's playing. So, I like that, Tony. Good pick. I picked for this week, who's up for me? Texas Tech men's basketball. I don't remember a lot of buzz about Texas Tech before the season started, but they are 21-6, second in the Big 12. J.D. Toppin averaging 17-9. This is a team that's looking to be at worst right now, probably a 3 seed and maybe a 2 seed in the tournament here. They have kind of replaced Iowa State, who was really hot the first couple months of the season, but have kind of fallen back. Now, Iowa State had to deal with a couple of injuries. Iowa State didn't have two of their main scorers yesterday when they lost to Houston. And there's no shame to losing at Houston in any way, shape, or form. But Texas Tech has played some really, really good basketball this season, and they've got a chance to make another run like they did a few years ago under Chris Beard.
Yeah, they've kind of reloaded, because when Beard left to go to Texas, they kind of plateaued, if you will.
Yeah.
And then bringing in, I believe it's Joey McGuire, if I remember correctly, has really solidified them. And they are one of the top teams, not just in the Big 12, but in the country. And that Big 12, along with the SEC, those two are just meat grinders night in, night out with who you have to play.
Yeah, I think SEC 1, Big 12 2, Big 10 3. And then a pretty big drop off to either the Big East or the ACC this year, Tony. That's the way I would rank our Power Five conferences now, at least for this season. So, Tony, who are you down on this week?
Marty, is there a more disappointing team in the NBA than the Philadelphia 76ers? They're 1-9 in their last 10. They've lost 7 in a row. And if I remember reading the article correctly, I believe they benched Joel Embiid the other day, and he did not want to talk to the media about it, so I can't really tell you why, but this has been a train wreck all year long on a team that I was pretty high on, making a NBA Finals appearance this year.
Yeah, it is a dumpster fire with a prairie fire, with a forest fire, with a Chernobyl-esque fire of the nuclear reactor melting down here. And oh, by the way, they have, as mentioned before earlier in the pod, Embiid's extension hasn't kicked in yet. They just signed Paul George for a lot of money over the next 4 years. He's got 3 years left on his contract. And teams are much smarter now than they used to be. A lot of dumb front offices would say, oh, Joel Embiid, we'll pay this and this and this for him. It's Joel Embiid. It's like, no, he's got more creaks than the Tin Man. And it's been really, really disappointing. And you were right. You're right. A lot of people, including ourselves, thought they had a lot of really, really positive elements to make a serious run at the title. And boy, they have just fallen flat on their face. It's been really, really ugly basketball out of the city of brotherly love. Good thing the Eagles have been so good. That's the only blessing that they've had. And now they better hope the Phillies get off to a good start as well. So
maybe the Flyers can do something in the Stanley Cup.
There you go. I am down, and forgive me, Cousin Jim, very similar to what we talked about with Rock Chalk Jayhawk, but another blue blood, the North Carolina Tar Heels, Tony, have just not been good. Again, highly thought of, as usual. Lost early to Kansas by 3, really, really good game. But the ACC is not what you would call a great conference. They've won 3 games in a row, but those have been against Virginia, who's under 500, North Carolina State, who is also under 500, 11-16, and Syracuse, who's also under 500. I don't think they've beaten a good team, what you would call a good team, a quality team. I'm going through their schedule. Not since they beat UCLA before Christmas, Tony, have they beaten what I would call a quality opponent. And if you're North Carolina, that is just not acceptable. So I am really down on the Tar Heels here. Again, Cousin Jim, forgive me, my brother, but I gotta call it out when I see it, and it's just not been a good year in Chapel Hill.
No, and like you said, just not the standards of what North Carolina basketball is about. But it'll be interesting. They can keep on a win streak. Do they get an at-large bid?
It's got, you know, I check bracketology pretty regularly, more so for my son and his, you know, friends down at Nebraska. But I have, I guess I can just do a quick run here. And I don't even know if they're going to be even listed in the bubble watch or, they are amongst the first four out right now is where they are. So, let's see here. I'm doing a lot of math. I think they're 72 out of 68. So they've got a leapfrog right now, Oklahoma, SMU, and Georgia. So, just to get in. So, it's, you know, they got time. But boy, they're going to have to go on a heck of a run here, Tony. So, all right, episode number 121, habits, good habits, positive habits. Tony, any parting shots?
Remember, Rome wasn't built in a day, and neither are habits. You're going to have to spend some time and continue to highlight when they do it right and be patient, work with them when you're trying to correct something.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to take time. Crawl, walk, run. Can't agree with you whether it's personal habits or your team's habits or an individual player's habits. Just keep coaching them up. That's what we get paid the big bucks for, and that's what you need to do. So, keep that in mind as you move forward here. Keep it in mind if you're in the Omaha area, if you're in need of any car services, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. I'm bringing my car in this week to get something checked out here again. Fingers crossed, Tony. I really hope it's not something bad, but AutoZone did not have great news for me yesterday. So, you know, we're going to get that checked out. So support them. All American used cars and trucks. If you're in the field of looking for a new to you type of automobile, check that out as well. Been great talking with Tony here. Tony, have a good time at your banquet tonight, my friend. Hope you enjoy that. What's on the menu?
I'm not sure what we're catering in tonight. I'm guessing something with chicken because it's been that for the last few anyway.
Okay, sounds good. Tony's got to get going here. Appreciate his time. Appreciate your time, coaches. We'll be back here next week talking about something. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.